Calls and Stories with Rosemary Ellen Guiley coming up next. Her book is called The Road to Strange, and we'll get to your calls when we come back on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back, Rosemary Ellen Guiley with us, The Road to Strange. Rosemary, there sometimes seems to be a trickster element related to alien encounters. How come?
It's one of the great unknowns, and we see it in the paranormal, too, and even in cryptid encounters. We're dealing with other realities that obviously don't have the same ground rules that we do. And some of these trickster elements make it easy for skeptics to dismiss the whole thing as imagined or not real, in other words. And, for example, take one of the cases we have in the book where three aliens present a girl with a silver plate, and they pile grass on it, and they want her to eat grass with them. It makes absolutely no sense. And we have no idea why aliens would do that. It's a bizarre behavior to us, but it seemed to be perfectly normal to them. And she had a considerable encounter with them. We had the guy from 1961, Joe Simonton, who saw a craft and looked up inside it and saw an alien flipping flapjacks on a flameless appliance and gave him some of the flapjacks. They were analyzed and determined to be soybean and buckwheat and some other items. It's like some of this, there's a big joke going on. And is the joke on us, or are we dealing with reality rules that we just don't understand? But there is this heavy trickster element to it. And another part of that trickster element is the closer that researchers get to what they feel is the answer or an answer they're looking for or the truth, in quotes, something happens and everything goes topsy-turvy.
My guest before you came on, Rosemary, is a physicist, and he believes in extraterrestrial life, but doesn't necessarily believe it has come here yet. He's still playing around with how they got here. I'm sure they have an advanced propulsion system beyond anything we can even imagine right now.
Some of them undoubtedly do, and I also think that a lot of our experiences are with beings that are right here on Earth. They're in a parallel dimension, and they come through openings or portals in these dimensions. So they're really not from miles away, so to speak, but their reality is distant to us, but yet it's right next to us. And I think a lot of the beings that we call ETs are probably what might be interdimensionals.
Back in the 50s, there was a fellow by the name of George Adamski. Remember that name?
I do, yes.
He claims that he was taken aboard a ship and taken to Venus. And the media, I think, at that time, handled him with kid gloves. But, I wasn't really into it at the time. I was a kid. Do you remember if they laughed at him or if they took him seriously?
Well, I like your term kid gloves because back then nobody knew what to make out of a lot of this. And Adamski did, he attracted quite a band of followers who believed in his experiences, and he became kind of a cult figure for a while. In those early days, it seems that we were identifying aliens more as from other planets. That seemed to be our frame of reference, that they were coming from Venus was a very popular destination, a source rather, and Mars and other planets in the solar system, and now we look at them from far-flung galaxies and star systems. But he was an interesting figure, and what he was actually in contact with, to me, is still a mystery. George Van Tassel was another person who had contact with beings who said they were from Venus, and he built the Integratron out there near Joshua Tree, which was supposed to be a time machine and rejuvenation chamber, and the aliens supposedly gave him the plan, came down and landed in the desert and handed him the plans for it. There were other followers of Adamski, George Williamson Hunt was another one. He and some friends of his start contacting aliens. They got interested in Adamski and started contacting aliens on their own, first through a Ouija board. And a lot of these communications were, the Ashtar Command and warnings about the planet. It's a very interesting period in our early contact days.
Yeah, it sure is. Let's go to some of the phones now for you. Let's go to Herc in Dallas, West Virginia. Hey, Herc, go ahead.
Yeah, sir. Thanks again for taking my call.
Sure thing.
I was wondering why would we be released after an abduction unless we were being observed afterwards?
All right, good question. Why release us, Rosemary?
Well, this people who are periodically abducted may be part of some experiment like we would do with animals in the wild, where we tag them and then periodically we find them and check them out and see what their health is like and what they're eating and where they're domiciled. And the same thing might be going on with us to release us and then observe us, track us in our natural habitat. What I've always wondered is the people who are abducted who don't come back, and I'm sure that there are some of those.
I think so, too. Next up, we go to Miguelina in Queens, New York. How did I do on your name?
Hi, thank you, Miguelina. That's a female for Michael in Spanish.
Okay, go ahead.
I'm glad. Thank you, George, and thank you, Rosemary. I'm glad to hear your voice, both of you. I wish I could stay every night, but it's now 4 o'clock in the morning. And
it sure is.
Okay, about 19 years ago, I went to Spain with my mother, my daughter, and some family members. And when I came back, I was like in another. I was very strange. For 2 years, I did not change the time on my watch. I did not pay attention to the clocks. It was the time of Spain. And every morning when I woke up, I knew I was in New York because I would hear the sound of the heat coming up. But I woke up like it was not my room. Like normally when you wake up in your own room, you know that you are in your house. But this was like a total different sensation. And it lasted for 2 years. And it bothered me because my body felt very strange. And about 2 months ago, I think it was January 13, going into the 14th, I usually don't sleep on the side of the window, but I decided to put my head on that looking out the window, and I don't have a good curtain. Part of the curtain was up. And I turned my head, and the sky was like crushed velvet. That's the way I can describe it, like gray and black. So I turn my head again, trying to go to sleep, and again I open my eyes and I turn, and the sky is completely clear. I go to the window, and I see this airplane that is like a DC-10. That's what I remember, that it could be a DC-10, going all the way up. And usually we see them around here because I'm near LaGuardia Airport and Kennedy. You see them at a lower level when they take off or when they're about to land. I said, what is this plane going so high? But okay, it was a plane. I kept watching, and all of a sudden, this plane descended almost to my eye level, like let's say a 20-story building or lower. And it looked like a triangle. I don't know trigonometry too much, geometry. I think it's like isosceles, one that is like it has three parts, but it's the other way. And it was emanating like a blue and white light. Actually, at one point, it looked like a scissors. Then, all of a sudden, it started moving left to right, then up and down, like a bouncing like a ball, very gently. I said, what is this? And that's my experience, and I believe that was a UFO.
What do you think of that story? Thanks, Miguelina. What do you think of that story, Rosemary?
The New York area has had a lot of triangle sightings over the years.
It has.
Very famous wave from the mid-1980s in the Hudson Valley. People often see strange lights or craft moving in unusual ways in the sky. When you're near an airport, it becomes a lot trickier to evaluate in terms of what you're actually seeing. So this is a little hard to evaluate without knowing what normal aircraft would have been in the sky at the time, compare that to what she actually saw. If it was a triangular craft, that's possibly an interesting sighting of something unknown. As I mentioned, they've been quite prevalent in the New York area. A lot of times we don't find explanations for what we see. We aren't able to ascertain known facts in order to evaluate something, and we're left wondering at what we experienced.
Have you ever seen a UFO?
I have on one occasion, and I was out in the Palm Springs area, I was just doing some sky watching. I went outside at night. I was wanted to see if I could see some meteors, and just gazing up at the sky, and I saw, I can only describe it as a large rectangle. It was a gray rectangle, and it suddenly appeared in view. I can't say how big it was or how high it was, but it was big enough that I could see that it was like a flying rectangle, and it was gray, and it's like it popped into the sky, and then it popped out again, and I don't know what that was. I've heard other accounts of flying rectangles as well as cigar-shaped objects, too.
We go to our first-time caller, Francisco, in Tucson, Arizona. Hi, Francisco. Go ahead.
Hi, George. Thank you again for accepting my call.
Sure.
Hi, Rosemary.
Hi there. How are you?
Oh, fabulous. Thank you. I have a story to tell you. Back in 1994, my family, my wife, and my three boys were driving up to L.A. I was on the Salton Seaside. I guess I would be in the east side of the Salton Sea. And it's about 12:30 at night. I'm driving. My family is asleep. And then all of a sudden, to my left, up in the sky at a 45-degree angle, I see a light coming down. And it's about, and then it comes to about a mile up ahead of us. It stops on the other side of the freeway, the opposite side. And it stops, and it illuminates lights on the ground. Then it turns out the lights, and I'm watching this. There's a front light. It comes again towards me. Then it does the same thing. And then so I wake up, my wife and my sons wake up. I say, look at this. And then they start screaming. So then it comes towards us again. It turns out those lights comes towards me, and then it comes on the left, my driver's side. But it starts to go the way that I'm going, you know. And there's no sound, no propeller, nothing. I just seen like a little lip. I seen like hieroglyphic things and dim light. Then it jumps to the passenger side of us, and my son starts screaming and you know scared. And my son says, "That's on this side. That's on this side." Then it jumps back to my side, and I'm looking, trying to find what it is. You know, let's see, this little lip, a hump in the top, and those hieroglyphic writings. And all of a sudden, it takes off fast, you know. And then it stops. Did that put the lights on the ground, and then it took off again up into the skies at a 40 for the same way it came. And it just disappeared, you know. And I've told this to George, but I've always kept this. And I'm just still amazed at what I saw. But there was no sound, no windows, nothing. I just could see the dim light and, the hieroglyphic type signs on the side of it was kind of chromish, about 3 cars long, and I could see the bottom of it. But it was just amazing what I saw. And I know it wasn't from this earth because, I live near Davis Mountain Air Force Base here. And I see the planes and jets. But this was amazing. And that really shocked me, surprised me. I mean, I was amazed to see this. But, it's always stood with me. And I didn't lose any time or anything like that, it's just funny the way it came up to my side. And then it starts going backwards as I'm driving about 55 miles an hour. You know, then it shoots to the other side, comes back, and then it took off. You know, it was quite an amazing
event. Could you see any structure to the craft at all, like bolts or rivets or anything like that?
No, George, it was pretty smooth. I see kind of like silvery in the bottom, had like a little lip. I just remember like a dim light on the side. It was kind of grayish, dark. You know, it was nighttime, so. But I see like a hump. I could see the hump, but and I could see like a little roundness on the bottom, and some kind of like hieroglyphics, right, like lines and stuff on the side. But I didn't see anything. It was just very smooth, you know.
Interesting take on that, Rosemary.
This kind of experience is, I think, very common in terms of UFO encounters, you know, mystery lights in the sky. And most of the time, they go unreported. People have the experiences. They don't see anything in the newspaper afterwards, so they wonder if anyone else had the experience. But we've collected so many of this kind of experience, it seems to be very common. And I wonder what the actual incidence of these experiences is, because something's observing us. Something follows people in their cars, looks in on their houses, does strange aerial maneuvers, and then almost always either just instantly disappears or shoots off into the sky at a tremendous speed.
Do you think they're coming from other dimensions or other physical planetary systems?
I believe it's both.
Well, that's possible, too. With the other dimensions, could be other universes?
Certainly, a parallel universe to ours. Beings in those other realities could have developed some sort of technology, just like beings on distant planets. Here again, they're operating under rules that are different from ours. And when these realities intersect, that's when we have these encounters and contact experiences that often mystify us and don't make sense.
We've lost a lot of great researchers, John Mack, Bud Hopkins, John Lear. These were people that were just, you know, J. Allen Hynek. They were at the top of the field, I think, don't you?
They certainly did some outstanding work. I was so sad when John Mack died after he was hit by the truck in England, because I thought that, his breakout book, Abduction, was such a seminal work. And I thought that he was really on the frontier of doing, you know, some more
cutting-edge
work in the contact field. And it was just tragically cut short.
Cutting edge, wasn't it, his work?
I'm sorry?
His work was cutting edge.
It was definitely cutting edge. And other researchers have, you know, picked up the standard, you know, they're the standard bearers too. But we all wonder in the field, you know, do these things happen deliberately to researchers who get too close?
Well, that's a good question. That's
information or truth.
Very good question indeed. Stay with us. We're going to come back and take final phone calls with Rosemary Ellen Guiley in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, our final segment here with Rosemary Ellen Guiley, author of the book, The Road to Strange, UFOs, Aliens, and High Strangeness. What has been the strangest reported ET, Rosemary, that you've come across?
Oh, wow, that's kind of a tough question to answer.
A praying mantis type or anything like that? That, to me, would be weird looking.
I was just going to say the insectoids probably rank right up there in the strangest. We have a rather terrifying account in the book, a young man who was repeatedly abducted over a period of years by praying mantis beings, and they had some sort of sidekick that was like a shorter and hooded, and it looked like a kind of a beetle-like face, another insectoid, and he was... They put something in his head. He was abducted and taken away. He'd come back bruised and exhausted and drained. He felt that they were implanting thoughts in his head. The experiences advanced to the point where they took him up in a ship and showed him the Earth and different countries on the Earth and commented on politics that were going on and said that there were underground bases where aliens were massing. and they showed him an underground base somewhere in the United States that they said had 14,000 aliens in it.
Jeez.
And these were, he said, these beings do not have our best interests in mind. They're very hostile to us. And that went on for a period of years. You can imagine how terrifying that would be.
Do you think Lucifer or the devil may have been construed as an ET?
It's certainly possible. And over the years, when I've looked at so many contact experiences of all kinds, positive and negative, there's such an overlap in characteristics and how people encounter them and the effects that they have on people. It gets very hard to separate things.
Yeah, it really does. What do you think of Genesis when it talks about fallen angels and then equate that to ETs?
There certainly could be a connection there, and I've even equated the fallen angels to jinn, the watchers also who leave their posts and cohabit with human women. There are so many references in the Bible, and I know Barry Downing is one of those who's...
Yeah.
Great job of examining Bible passages to see an ancient alien presence here. And that's one reason why I believe that we've been encountering these beings from the get-go. They've always been part of human history and maybe even put us here in the first place.
And there's no question, Rosemary, that something is happening. Would you agree?
It certainly is. It's been going on throughout the ages. And now that we're in a high-tech era and we have more advanced science, it's picking up momentum.
Well, it really is. And let's go to some of the phone calls here, of course, for you. Let's go to Bryant in Henderson, North Carolina. Hi, Bryant. Go ahead.
Hi, Mr. North. Thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome, sir.
And I'd like to thank your guest tonight. I think she's a very good guest. And Rosemary, and
thank you.
I want to tell you, I enjoy the show. It's more than just a show. I look forward to it every night. It's like therapy for me.
Well, thank you.
It's great.
It's become a way of living for so many people, hasn't it?
Yes, sir. It just brings a lot to us, and you are an amazing person. And we all appreciate everything you do for us.
Oh, that's very kind.
Yes, sir. I'd like to say tonight, I've never seen an alien or anything like that, but if I don't trust them, I don't trust them, Mr. Norris. If they are here or they are coming here, they're up for no good. What do you think? Aren't they?
Well, you know, you may be right. And as Rosemary's been saying tonight, there is that distinct possibility that there are some that have a very evil agenda. Rosemary, I'll let you comment again.
I do believe that's true, as well as the good side. You have to ask the question, if aliens were here to benefit us in some dramatic way, why not be more open about it? Is it that human beings can't accommodate their existence, their presence, and so it has to be sort of covert? The ones working on the dark side, naturally they're going to be in the shadows, and they're not going to want us to know what's going on. Cases have been made that the Earth is a rich place. Human beings are a rich source of energy, of labor. There are all kinds of ways that aliens could be looking at us to use us. And I think those agendas are going on. And it would not be in the interests of those beings for us to advance in our technology and our consciousness to maintain our sovereignty and free will. I believe it is the spiritual birthright of humanity to have that ascension of consciousness, to have sovereignty and free will. And we have beings that are interfering in that.
Let's go next to Michael in Cleveland, Ohio. Hi, Mike. Go ahead.
Thank you, George. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Hopefully
thing.
My connection is good.
Not bad.
I wanted to ask Rosemary if there's been any research into abductee experiences about whether or not an abductee has left their body during an abduction, like an out-of-body experience, and possibly if that could have a correlation with missing time, say, like if their body was taken and to a different dimension or a different corner of the universe, or their soul was taken to a different dimension or corner of the universe and if that's a plausible explanation for the missing time.
Interesting question. What do you think? Has anybody reported leaving their body during one of these episodes?
Off the top of my head, I can't think of someone saying that specifically. However, the abduction experience itself could be an out-of-body experience, that physically we might not be transported somewhere, but we might be transported in a double, for example, or out-of-body. There are many experiences on record where people feel sort of outside of themselves, like they're more points of consciousness when they have their contact experiences, and so that would be out of body. There is a correlation between near-death experience, out of body experience, and alien contact, and that's been coming up in a lot of research that's been done in the past few years, and people are exploring those connections.
Let's go to Joe in the Bronx in New York. Hey, Joseph, go ahead.
Hey, George, how are you?
All is good.
Good. Yeah, Rosemary, I wanted to ask whether they have any knowledge of what specific star systems these extraterrestrials are traveling from to the Earth.
There have been some reports, Rosemary, of specific star systems that they're coming here, the Zetas, for example. Have you picked up anything else?
Well, in the surveys that have been done in recent years, the global survey data that was collected by FREE, in most cases, people did not know where the aliens were coming from. The aliens did not say. But when they did say, they mentioned the Pleiades more than anything else. And Orion was also mentioned, Arcturus, Zeta Reticuli. Those were the most common ET sources that were cited. But in most cases, I thought that was very interesting. In most cases, the aliens did not say where they were from.
And they've got to be coming, and they've got to have a propulsion system that is much like I've talked about, bending space and time, because there's no way they're going to get here the way we're traveling.
Well, unless they've mastered some sort of interdimensional travel, too.
Yeah, exactly. They're going through wormholes or something.
Wormholes
or portals.
There may be something in quantum physics that could explain, you know, these visitations. Some of them, I think, do have advanced technology. I think it's a mix of everything.
Anthony and Tifton, George is with us now. Anthony, hello there.
Hey, how's it going?
Okay.
Hey, I just wanted to talk about one situation that had happened to me when I was 6 years old. My family, my mom, dad, and my older sister went to the San Diego Zoo, and it was strange. My dad had been seeing a Dr. Smith before we went there, and we went on the vacation, and while I was at the zoo, I saw this man that was looking at us, and I looked, and it was Dr. Smith.
Hmm.
And he noticed that I noticed him. Then he walked up and acted like it was a big coincidence. But somehow, even at that young age, I knew something was amiss. But when we were coming back through the desert back to Arizona, I was born in 1966 in Arizona.
Okay.
And I grew up there till I was 21. But I was just leaning back on the seat, and I was looking in the sky. And to me, all I knew at that point is that the stars were just dancing. I saw, like, so many stars just flying around and doing things. And in retrospect, when I got older and learned about the UFO phenomena, I said those were UFOs. I was able to piece it together. But the weirdest thing was that was all I remember at that point. But over the years, I started getting bits and pieces of memories through dreams. And also just during my waking life of that event. And one of the things that had come up, and it was just a piece, it wasn't a whole answer to the whole event, but I saw us, you know, going down that road that we're on, and all of a sudden our car just, you know, to me, the car just slowed down, and I wasn't really aware of what was happening, but the car came to a stop. And then I looked, and my mom and my dad and my sister were all asleep.
Wow.
Yes. And I looked in out the front window, and there was a craft.
Interesting take. Rosemary, how do they have this capability of knocking you out or making you forget?
Well, many people talk about the mesmerizing stares that aliens have. And so if they make eye contact with someone, they could possibly put somebody into like a hypnotic state. They also communicate by telepathy, and so they may have some sort of thought transference that puts people into a sleep state. It would be sort of hypnosis by telepathy. They may also have some sort of energy technology that we don't understand that knocks people out as well.
It's amazing.
Nation.
Rosemary, I want to thank you for being on the show. The name of the book, The Road to Strange. Take care of yourself and keep in touch with us, okay?
Thank you, George. Always a pleasure. Good night.
Good night. Rosemary Ellen Guiley. Her website, by the way, is visionaryliving.com. Visionaryliving.com. That's linked up to coasttocoastam.com. Well, Saturday, it's St. Paddy's Day, and everybody celebrates. Be careful if you go out. But I always do this. This is a tradition for me. Our dear friend Christian Wild from myheartbook.com, who helps us with turmeric and everything else, has left us, as he has done every year, with a remarkable song called "O Danny Boy."
The pipes are calling from glen to glen and down the mountainside. The summer's gone and all the roses dying. It's you must go and I must fly. But come ye back when summer's in the meadow, or when the valley's hushed and white with snow. It's I'll be here in sunshine or in shadow. Oh, Danny boy, I love you so. But when ye come and all the flowers are dying, if I am dead, as dead I well may be, you'll come and find the place where I am lying, and kneel and say an Ave there for me. And I shall hear the soft you tread above me, and all my grave will warmer, sweeter. Sleep in peace until you come to me.
What pipes, huh? Christian Wild. Thank you, Christian. For Dan Galante, Donna Walker, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Latasur, Stephanie Smith, Chris Boros, and George Knapp. I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.